Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host. In today's episode, we're focusing on the effect COVID-19 had on training during the peak of the pandemic, what went well, what could have been done better, and what we've learned for the future with regards to training, education, and clinical practice. We have two interviews for you today with brilliant speakers who are going to be talking about the results from surveys that they undertook during the pandemic. Following this, Kirithi Varo, the chair of the Ophthalmologists in Training Group, also known as the OTG, tells us what exactly the OTG does for trainees and why the committee is particularly important in light of recent events. Today, I'm joined by Maria Antonia Ferreira, a medical and surgical fellow at the Royal Victoria Infirmary in Newcastle. Maria Antonia, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about your paper recently published in Eye, Reshaping Ophthalmology Training After the COVID-19 Pandemic. To start with, I was just wondering if you could tell the listeners about your study.
Thank you, Sunil, for inviting me to have this podcast. I'm very pleased to discuss with you about this study that I conducted along with members of the Ophtha Training Group. The idea behind the study was to react to the heavy and negative impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on ophthalmology training that we all experienced by ourselves. And so, starting from the perspective of who is primarily involved, propose some changes for the long-term reshaping of the training itself. At the end of April, we created this survey that was specifically addressed to ophthalmology residents and fellows to assess all three areas of ophthalmology training, clinical and surgical practice, and didactic teaching. With the first question, we investigated the changes experienced in daily activity by the trainees, and in this regard, we need to consider that the survey was referred to the months of March and April 2020, that for most European countries corresponded to the peak of the pandemic. So we know that during that period, in many countries, the ophthalmology department suspended elective clinical and surgical activity at all. Then we investigated the trainees' perception of the impact of the pandemic and their opinion about the potential effectiveness of technological educational tools like web-based teaching, simulation-based surgical training, and telementoring. As I said before, the idea was to use the crisis as a stimulus to make permanent changes and a long-term improvement of the ophthalmology training.
Maria Antonia, I just wanted to tell you, I found your paper really interesting. And I do want to tell all the listeners that, you know, they should all read your paper because I think that everybody can relate to it. You know, there's so many questions that I want to ask you about it. But before I get too carried away, I just want to talk to you a bit about the methodology, if that's okay. And I was wondering if you could just tell me, what exactly is the Ophtha Training Group?
The Ophtha Training Group is a group of colleagues with different professional and academic qualifications, sharing the interests and, in most cases, the involvement in ophthalmology training. I think this has been one of the strengths of this group because we could use the collaboration between professors, consultants, fellow, and resident to design the survey combining the points of view of teachers and learners. And this aspect is not trivial. Any effective teaching, and so any effective training, is a two-way process in which both the teachers and the learners need to be directly involved.
Okay. And can anyone join the Ophtha Training Group?
Of course. We are open to new members and new ideas. I would say knowledge and research are dynamic and ever-evolving, so we aim to stay up-to-date, and this needs to be applied also for the Ophtha Training Group.
Great. Well, maybe I can put a link to the Ophtha Training Group in the show notes. So one thing that really struck me about your paper was the fact that you had over 500 responses in literally 10 days. That's amazing. So how did you actually distribute the survey, and what was your response rate?
Oh, the survey was created using Google Forms and distributed through a link by email and WhatsApp Messenger over a period of 10 days. And I have to say that the possibility to distribute it through WhatsApp Messenger was really, really effective for the distribution of the survey because it could complete it on every kind of mobile, and so what's really easier for the respondents. The link was mainly distributed using institutional mailing lists or professional WhatsApp group, and the response rate, yes, was variable, but higher than 60%. So we can say that was satisfactory, absolutely satisfactory.
You know, I think that's really amazing. And I think that really speaks volumes of the possibilities that modern technology and smartphones have brought. You know, the way in which we're able to distribute messages, surveys and information across huge networks all over the world. So was the survey conducted just across Europe or was it international?
I can say that it's international because we got responses, more than 500 responses from 32 different countries, among which the best represented were Italy, UK and the Netherlands. But every colleague was welcome to share the survey with other colleagues in every country.
So now we really get to the most interesting part of the interview, and that's talking about the results from the survey. Something that I really felt the pinch of during the pandemic was the lack of surgery. You know, what did your respondents feel about the, you know, the halting of elective ophthalmic surgical procedures? And were there any comments that were made or any suggestions that were made in terms of maintaining surgical ability during the pandemic?
Yes, as expected, the survey clearly showed a massive decrease of both clinical but mainly surgical activity, superior to the 75% for most of the trainees. And about half of the respondents reported that they suspended completely the surgical practice. Also, worryingly, more than half of the respondents of the residents and third of the fellows felt that this gap impaired their ability to perform cataract surgery routinely. Obviously, this is something that is really crucial for the surgical training, but on the other point of view, we also ask about the simulation-based surgical training. And we saw that the feeling about the simulation-based surgical training was really, really positive, with more than 85% of respondents that think that it can help to retain and improve surgical skill. I mean, this is not only the feeling of our respondents, but it's also demonstrated in literature. There is a recent review by Lee et al. About the simulation-based training tools, and it has been demonstrated that the IC surgical simulator, for example, is associated with a lower rate of complications and with improved theater performance in cataract surgery. So this is definitely something that we need to optimize. I personally experienced a gap in my surgical practice. I'm working also as VR fellow, so we never stop to do emergencies. I could do some surgeries because obviously retinal detachment is an urgent surgery to do, so we never stop completely, but obviously I also can say that my surgical practice decreased from probably 70-80%. I really enjoy the simulator. At the RBI we have the IC surgical simulator, so I personally think that is really helpful, and so this is definitely something that probably all the academic centers should be available for the trainees. It can really help.
That's really, really interesting. And I can definitely relate to that. And I'm sure lots of listeners can as well. So moving on now to talk about what you mentioned before about web-based teaching. You know, during the pandemic, I personally experienced a big cut in the face-to-face teaching that was offered in our region. And we had a lot of webinars, podcasts, online teaching, surgical teaching, YouTube videos to support our education during this time. How did the survey respondents feel about the offering of web-based teaching?
The feeling about the web-based teaching was definitely positive. Also, the most of the respondents declared that after an initial gap, they switched to a web-based teaching, so the impact on the didactic teaching was much less compared with the clinical and surgical practice. And we also suggested some specific changes for the web-based teaching, or at least implementation, I don't want to say changes, With regard to the clinical session of web-based teaching, the addition of clinical case presentation, because we know that the case-based learning improves the decision-making and the clinical thinking. And with regard to the surgical training, the addition of demonstration of surgical techniques through live discussion of edited surgical videos. I think that we all agree on the crucial role of the web-based teaching during this period, but the survey show another interesting point. Most of the trainees think that the web-based teaching is not a proper replacement of traditional lecturing, but more as a complementary training tool. So probably the best is the middle, as usual. So the balanced combination of traditional and modern web-based teaching. Probably I can say that the live interaction teacher-learner is one of the main advantages of the face-to-face lecturing, but we need to remember that now we have web-based teaching format that allow us to preserve this interaction, such as the webinars. I personally assessed the impact of the active learning in a hybrid course, web-based course in vitreoretinal surgery that Professor Romano conducted at Humanitas University in Milan. And this course combined formal lectures with real-time webinars for both surgery and lectures and active learning techniques. Even if there were two different groups, a group of participants attending at venue and another group attending via live streaming, at the end both groups rated the teaching effectiveness and the interaction level as very high, demonstrating that the attendance modality, also the live streaming attendance modality, did not compromise at all the interaction. So I definitely think that web-based teaching will remain a crucial part in any training program.
That's really interesting. So what do you think of the future of local and national teaching? And you know, also, what do you think will happen to the future of international medical conferences?
I think that all this kind of meeting, teaching educational courses can really be optimized with the introduction of the web-based teaching or some web-based modules. Mainly, I would say probably on the local basis or national basis. We definitely need also face-to-face discussion. I really think that is helpful, but we have to remember that as I said, webinars now, as well as all the other technological tools that we have, really allow us to share knowledge, to have real-time discussion. There is the instant messaging. Also, the telementoring is something that we could never think about before. And now it's something that is probably becoming the reality.
Your survey also explored respondents' opinions regarding virtual clinics and telephone consultations. Could you share with us some of the opinions that were shared in the survey?
Yeah, we mainly asked about what they think the usefulness of virtual clinic for their training, and they had a positive feeling. Not all the respondents were performing a telephone consultation and virtual clinic, and not all, a significant proportion of respondents didn't feel confident in both virtual clinic and telephone consultation. I would say this is something that we can understand. I think that they are both useful tools for our ophthalmology practice, but we definitely need to learn how to do it. It's not an immediate process. In this regard, I will mention something that William Osler said. Just listen to your patient. He's telling you the diagnosis. This is true, but again, it's not immediate. And during a telephone consultation, more than during the face-to-face examination, we need to learn which are the right questions to ask and which details we need to focus on. Over the last few months, I personally experienced the feeling to be not so confident in telephone consultation, or at least to be worried about what the patient would say, but then I learned that with the right question, I could get exactly the information that I wanted from the patient. And the patient also feels really reassured by telephone consultation, at least in my experience, as I said. I think we are definitely switching towards more virtual clinic, more telephone consultation, teleophthalmology, but we do not have to forget to explain carefully to patients why and what is going to change for them in order to improve their acceptance of this new examination format.
So you would then say that even after the pandemic has settled, that in our specialty, we will see a much higher number of telephone consultations then?
Yeah, I would say yes, for all the specialties, as well as for the virtual clinic. For example, we in VR were not used to here at the RVI to do virtual clinic, but we are now planning to do it.
The COVID-19 pandemic has brought all sorts of terrible things and consequences, but it has made a massive change in the way we practice ophthalmology. Based on the survey results, would you say that there's perhaps one best single change or outcome that has happened as a result of the pandemic that you think will stay with us for the long term?
I would say so many changes have happened over the last few months that I feel that it's really difficult to answer. I think that it's probably too early to evaluate the impact of these changes in the ophthalmologist practice and training, as we are still changing. I mean, the new normal is not yet established, and my feeling is that also the best change has not yet happened. For the ophthalmology practice, I hope that implementing the new technology-based tools, this change will be the flexibility of the system. And finally, with regard to specifically to the training, we all clearly experience the need of permanent changes during these months. Now, on the basis of the survey, I can say that more than 500 trainees from more than 30 countries are telling us what they want. A new hybrid training that involves more active learning, implementing the technology and the media available, the optimization of the web-based teaching, simulation-based tools, and virtual realities. This reshaping in the long term could increase exponentially our learning opportunities and really ensure the continuity and the effectiveness of ophthalmology training.
So Maria Antonia, I have one final question for you, if that's okay. Your study was extremely impressive. You got such a high response rate and you engaged so many respondents. And I was wondering whether you might have any advice for a listener who might be thinking of conducting their own similar survey in the future, you know, with regards to how you designed the study, how you distributed it, and how you succeeded in really writing up this paper.
I would say start from thinking out of the box. As young specialists and researchers, we are able and keen to do it. Trust your project and obviously work hard to plan and manage it properly. With regard to the design of a survey or of a research, I would highlight two key points. Identify the target of your research. What do you want to demonstrate? Obviously, using your experience and your expertise to think about something interesting that makes sense and can make the difference. And second one, identify the target audience to which the survey is addressed and who will benefit from the results. In this way, I think it can be a very useful tool not only for teaching, but also for clinical and surgical knowledge to plan a research or create a network for research activities and develop new research ideas.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you to you, Sanil.
I'm now speaking with Kara Brogan, a glaucoma fellow working in Glasgow, to talk about his paper, Educational Concerns and Anxiety Levels Amongst Ophthalmology Trainees During the COVID-19 Pandemic. Kara, thank you so much for joining me today to speak about your work. It was a really interesting paper. Just to start with, I was wondering if you'd tell us what actually happened with regards to redeployment at the peak of the pandemic in Scotland.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sunil. It's a pleasure to speak on the Eye to Eye podcast. So, yes, yeah, so this project all came about during the heart of being redeployed to the COVID wards in the west of Scotland. So this was early March time, and at that point, it was clear that a number of trainees were going to be redeployed. I was ST7 at the time. At the end of my training, I thought I would be safe and in my comforts with ophthalmology, but sadly I was redeployed to one of the geriatric wards. This invoked, you know, a reasonable amount of anxiety. It's been several years since I've been on a medical ward. But, you know, I think the virtuous thing to do was to dust off the medical textbook and learn a bit about medicine and go back on the wards and help our colleagues. But, you know, certainly having anxiety amongst being redeployed to another specialty, it became apparent chatting to my colleagues, particularly my junior colleagues, that there was a real concern about de-skilling in ophthalmology and not progressing in education and their achievements within ophthalmology. And that prompted us to go on and do this study.
Could you tell us a bit more about your study?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a survey which we distributed to all of the trainees in the west of Scotland. So there's 33 trainees there. And the goal of this study was to measure concerns amongst trainees from one, de-skilling in ophthalmology, but two, also concerns regarding delays to their educations and achievements. I was particularly interested in the anxiety amongst trainees as well surrounding these issues. So we also incorporated a validated anxiety questionnaire, which consisted of 17 questions. And this was a very useful adjunct to the study. The most striking thing, certainly amongst de-skilling, as could be predicted, was the concerns regarding cataract surgery. 96% of the trainees had concerns for this. Then the next concern was becoming de-skilled in acute and on-call ophthalmology. And this is understandable because trainees have been taken away from the ophthalmology and put onto medical wards, and they're no longer doing acute on-calls for ophthalmology. And then lastly, the third most common concern was becoming de-skilled in their subspecialty. For me, this particularly was glaucoma. I've just started learning glaucoma surgery. It's picking up momentum. I was also doing some independent cataract lists and supervising juniors. And certainly my main concern was losing momentum on that and going back a step. Then it came on to concerns regarding education and achievement. The number one concern was delays to starting the next rotation. This was particularly prevalent in the senior trainees. You know, end of their training, they might not get a chance to complete that placement that they wanted to do before completing their training. The second concern was delays to work-based portfolio assessment. This was actually more relevant to the junior trainees. As I say, there's more exercises and work-based assessments for these trainees to get through, and there was a real concern that they might not get this done for the ARCP. And third most concern regarding delays to education and achievement was missing out on a particular rotation. And again, that was slightly more relevant to senior trainees.
So those are some really interesting findings, you know, although perhaps not completely unexpected. You mentioned before as well that your survey included, you know, an assessment of anxiety during the redeployment period and during the peak of the pandemic. You know, from a personal perspective and from what I know amongst my colleagues, I think it would be unlikely that anyone would disagree that almost everyone would suffer some level of anxiety during this pandemic, albeit to a different degree. Could you perhaps tell us a bit more about what your findings from the survey were specifically with regards to the anxiety questionnaire?
Yeah, so this anxiety questionnaire, which is validated in a psychiatry journal, consisted of 17 questions. The 17 questions were split into two parts. One was the intensity of that anxiety symptom, And the second part was the frequency that the trainee was experiencing that symptom. And the score from the questionnaires out of 340, and the median score for all the trainees was 56 out of 340, but ranged 0 to 170. So there was a generalised mild to moderate background level of anxiety. Despite this, 17% of the trainees experienced extreme anxiety in the past week. So, you know, I think this highlights the need for support of these trainees, particularly from their supervisors, senior colleagues, and the staff in the new environment they're working in.
Yeah, of course. I hope you don't mind if we take a slight tangent now, just slightly away from your study. Now, I'm quite curious, do you think there were any significant differences in the way the pandemic affected trainees in Scotland compared to trainees in the rest of the country?
You know, I think there's a big crossover in anxieties, particularly around de-skilling in cataract surgery. But, you know, looking at the general well-being of trainees, you know, there was a shared anxiety amongst looking after unwell and sick patients out with the comfort zone of that trainee's abilities. I think the support has varied greatly from trainees, certainly from, you know, the separate podcast I'd listened to, the excellent speaker was on previously, had highlighted that it was herself and an obstetrics and gynaecology consultant doing a ward round. That to me raises a lot of alarm bells. I think certainly where we were redeployed in the geriatric wards, we had an abundance of support. So although the anticipation of being redeployed was very severe for us, I think the reality of it wasn't quite as traumatic as I'd anticipated. Now, I think it would be a bit unfair for me to speak on behalf of all my colleagues, because certainly from our questionnaire, some colleagues were more anxious when we had sent the questionnaires out. And particularly some of our junior colleagues, they were redeployed to slightly busier wards, covering different A&E shifts. And so I think the experience has definitely varied greatly between trainees, not only in Scotland, but also Scotland and England. But I think collectively as a whole, I imagine all the trainees would be very concerned for delays in their ophthalmology progress.
I do agree with what you said there. And it's important to highlight that even though there are large regional differences in the way that the pandemic's been handled, there are major differences, you know, in an individual hospital, depending perhaps which ward the trainee has been redeployed to or who they're being supervised by. Mm. You know, one final question now, Kerr, if that's okay. And that's, you know, now that we're really coming out of the pandemic, hopefully, what do you think could have been done differently, or what do you think could have been done better?
Yes, so I think reflecting back over the months, I think some things were done very well and some things perhaps could have been done slightly better. Certainly, the ophthalmology trainees in the west of Scotland, we were all allocated medical consultants as supervisors when we were redeployed to the other wards, which is fine. However, you know, you don't really have a great rapport with that consultant because you've just met them. They don't know your training needs and concerns. And I feel that, you know, certainly from my point of view, I would be much more comfortable with my ophthalmology supervisor as a point of contact. And certainly our study did show that, you know, we actually asked the junior and senior trainees in our survey what they would like, what measures they would like to be implemented to ensure they're supported and their educational needs are being met through this difficult time. And one of the main requests was a regular point of contact with their ophthalmology supervisors and their department. And of course, other than have that feeling of support, I also want to have that feeling of camaraderie and to know that they're in this together as a team. And again, they've got the support and help at with a familiar source at hand. Another thing our department were very good at was regular teaching sessions. Our training program director was excellent and facilitated weekly Zoom presentations with speakers all around the UK. Not only did this help us keep on top of our ophthalmology knowledge, again, it made us feel like a team, and we're still in contact with our ophthalmology units. And certainly from our survey, that again was one of the top requests that trainees would like to have in place. I think other things that we could have done better, with the lack of surgery being redeployed in the COVID wards, there's a great need for an increase in simulated sessions. Now, this not only will help keep the trainee skills up, but when trainees transition back into working in ophthalmology, this will also improve patient safety, as the trainees have still been practicing and rehearsing their suturing or their cataract skills using the ISAI. Certainly from my own perspective, I realised I wasn't getting much trabeculectomy surgery, so this prompted us to order trabeculectomy dry eyes, dry lab eyes, and arranged sessions with my consultant to practice releasable sutures and flap construction. And then this really kept my confidence up and ensured a smooth transition back into normal ophthalmology working life. So I think to summarise, it's not been an ideal situation for anybody in the country. I think there's been some drawbacks and barriers put up to training, but within every negative, there's always a positive. And certainly for me, it's been an opportunity to harness use of the dry lab, the wet lab, and generally reading around my subject and conducting this research. This research was done when I was redeployed, and actually I felt a lot more grounded and connected to the ophthalmology department doing this. So, touch wood, if there is a second spike and we need to be redeployed and help our medical colleagues, then, I would definitely advise to try and, stay with a mental positive attitude and try to keep progressing and in ophthalmology and take your education in your own hands.
Well, Kai, that's been really interesting, and thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you stay well.
Yeah, no, thank you, Sunil. Wish you all the best and happy to have been a part of the podcast.
Hi, my name's Kirthi and I'm the chair of the OCG, the Ophthalmologists in Training Group. So Sunil's asked me to say a few words about the OTG and what we do. We're a group of about 20 trainees representing all regions across the four nations. And our remit is to represent the interests of trainees at a national level at college. We have a representative in all of the major college committees, from exams and training all the way through to council and the trustee board. Now, depending on your region, your local OTG rep may also be the specialty training committee rep too. And just to explain that this is a different but equally important role, representing the views of local trainees at the Regional Health Education Board. The success of the OTG very much depends on engaging with trainees like yourself. And I can assure you that we've been working pretty hard over the past 6 months in particular to ensure that safeguards are put in place for our and your training. Some of our key achievements include the guidance document on recommendations for training during COVID-19, which is available on the college website, along with helping the college to adapt their exams in line with the latest public health restrictions. Just like you, we're all too aware of the impact this pandemic has had on training. Many of you will have concerns, particularly around getting into theatre and surgical skills training. Our advice is really to make the best of the range of simulation opportunities available, from local wet labs and ISAI machines, all the way through to webinars and dedicated YouTube channels. In particular, the Simulated Ocular Surgery Gallery, which is simply gallery.simulatedocularsurgery.com, has a range of very helpful video demonstrations of simulation. This will ensure that you maximise your time in theatre, even if that's temporarily limited. Whatever concerns you have, please do get in touch with your local OTG rep and they will bring it to our attention. If it's not something we can resolve, we will always raise it with college and get back to you with a response. Also, I hope that over the course of your training, you do take the opportunity to apply to be on the OTG. It's an incredibly rewarding role and a great way to forge relationships with peers and college leads alike. I believe the college is holding a webinar for all ST1s next Monday at 6 p.m. So I look forward to speaking with you then. Cheers.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.